Welcome to Health Naturally on 2NUR FM. Greg Richard, joined today by Dennis Stewart. Good afternoon, Dennis.
Hello, Greg. It's very nice to see you again.
It has been a while between
it
drinks
is. And
us.
Every time you come in, I notice the T-shirt you wear.
Yep.
Has a message on it. So, well done, mate. I can't read it too well, but there's a message on it. What's it? Dashville Progress Society.
They're a supergroup cover band is what I'd call them.
Oh, wow. You're right with it, aren't you?
So, lots of local bands coming together.
How about that?
And doing covers.
Well, how about that? See, I learn every time I come and do a program with you and note the T-shirt you wear, and you wear a lot of T-shirts. Well, there's a message on it.
I assume most people do wear a lot of T-shirts.
No, no, not at all. Being a country boy at heart, mate, come on. Gloucester shirts are my favourite shirt, but they don't make them anymore.
Oh.
So I go around Vinnie's and all the other shops and look for extra large shirts in that brand. I have a few that'll last me the distance.
Oh, I should have worn the flannel this morning then. I had one ready to go.
Yes, well, I'll do that one day. I like them because they've got two pockets and you can put a lot of stuff in two pockets in your shirt.
Yep.
And when you haven't got them there, you notice the difference.
Also, you're probably least likely to forget them if they're in the front two pockets as well. Where your back pockets, you're always thinking, if I've got something there, but your front two pockets.
You're exactly right. I do that all the time. So I'll bring you in one day as a parting gift, one of my Gloucester shirts.
It'll be an absolute honour.
There you go.
I think we've slightly gone off track.
Let's get to the program.
Ginkgo biloba, you've been talking famous herbs the last few weeks.
Well, we have. I took up that topic because there are a number of herbs that I've used and read about and lectured on, which, in fact, are famous.
Mm.
And I, last week, introduced listeners to what I consider to be the third member of probably the most famous herb that I'm aware of, but I didn't get far with it. So this week, I've determined to work a little bit further with information on the herb Ginkgo biloba. Now, listeners have heard me over the years talk about this herb in various ways, but I want to emphasise this morning the fame of the herb and why it is famous and why it has made a considerable contribution in natural medicine to the management of serious chronic diseases, particularly ageing diseases. But unfortunately, I have not seen too much uptake of it by mainstream medicine here or in other English-speaking countries. Unlike European countries, ginkgo here in this country, unfortunately, is only being surfacely touched, if you like, by those of us that know of its benefits. I want to talk about it today a lot more, Greg.
Righto, we'll get right into that.
We will indeed.
Now, Dennis, you want to talk about ginkgo today?
We certainly do, if we get there.
We get there, but we've got Sharon from Fern Bay, and she's got a question about Maligne leaf tea.
Hello, Sharon.
Hi, Dennis. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. How are you, my dear?
I'm good, thank you.
That's good. How can we help you, Sharon?
I'm just wondering where I can get the Mulin tea.
Oh, I can help you with that. In fact, it's interesting you should ask that because a listener to this program some time ago rang up. I think she even mentioned it on radio that she, in fact, collected Maligne, processed it, that means dried it, and powdered it and converted it into a lovely packed herbal tea, some of which I have in my rooms at New Lambton.
Right.
What I will do, if you'd like to ring my rooms, I will give you her details so that you can contact her rather than mention names, etc., on my program. I'll be very happy to give you the details. It's a very, very useful tea. And I know a lot about it, and that's why I was delighted this lass that contacted me via the program is doing something with a herb that grows prolifically, particularly in the right area. I'm not sure whether you've ever seen it grow, but if you go to cooler climates, for instance, my wife and myself frequently go to the New England area, which is cooler, and on granite country, and Maligne is all over the place. It's like some people call it Aaron's rod that budded because it develops a quite strong spike, and at the end of it, there's a group of yellow flowers, and the leaves of mullein are very velvety, are very grey, and they form what's called a rosette, similar to comfrey. When you look at comfrey, the style of leaf on comfrey, very similar to that which is on mullein, but it grows prolifically. I mean prolifically, and my wife and myself used to go and particularly collect from the area where it grew prolifically. We would collect the flowers, which are a very therapeutic component of the herb, particularly for ear problems, earache and blockage of the ear. We'd collect those and then convert them into a medicinal product when we came home. The leaf, on the other hand, as this young lass is doing, is processed for its benefits on the lung. And in Western herbal medicine, it is a primary remedy for what we would refer to as chronic, very, very chronic respiratory conditions, where there may even be some serious tissue damage. Mullein is considered to be a very useful herb to maintain what health the lung has, or help to do that. It's what I refer to, and this is a term that mainstream medicine sort of raises their eyebrow at, but I consider it to be one of the best tonic herbs for the lung. In other words, it sustains even a failing respiratory system and lessens infection, helps resolve a lot of congestion, and is pleasant as a herbal tea. So I sense that by listening to you speak. But that's why I'd be delighted to help you get hold of this and deal with this young lady who was doing something that I've encouraged particularly younger growers and listeners to do over the years, and that is to take seriously what the Americans have done for generations, and that is to take seriously the idea of foraging for herbs, drying them, and marketing them either at markets or even in retail outlets. I'm glad you're using mullein. If you contact me at my rooms, if you talk to the receptionist, she'll give you the number. I'll be happy to give you the full details and what else I can help you with.
Okay. And you're at New Lambton?
Yes. And just I don't like mentioning anything about the practice on it because I'm not here to promote myself, but I'm happy to help people do these sorts of things. So if you contact the receptionist that puts you through here, she will take your number and give it to me. If you can't contact me, I will do so for you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Sharon.
We've got Tony now from Clarencetown, and they've got a question about the hawthorn berry.
Ah, hawthorn berry. Tony, you would have heard me talk about hawthorn berry. Yes, well, you know my enthusiasm for this great remedy. I have put it in the category of being one of the most famous Western herbal medicines, albeit not fully appreciated as to its tonic abilities for the heart and the cardiovascular system. Hawthorn berry, botanically known as Crataegus. Interestingly, we refer to it as hawthorn berry, mainly because when it's in its full developed stage, it has a lovely maroon-coloured berry on it, which is sometimes also eaten or turned into a gel or a jam, as we would call it. But tree, it's a lovely little tree. Again, if you go to the New England, you can't miss it. It's all along the roadside. I suspect that it may have been planted in that area as it had traditionally been planted in England as a barrier against cold winds. And it's everywhere. My wife and myself go up there and to a place called Arding. There's actually a road there called Hawthorne Road, which is lined with the hawthorn trees. The leaf and the flower is also used. Hence, when we refer to hawthorn berry, particularly as a medicine, some preparations would in fact incorporate the berry, the leaf, and the flower head itself. I'm glad you're using it because I consider it so important that every day of my life, as my wife will vouch for it, I take hawthorn berry. And I take it because I sincerely believe that, particularly at this very late stage of my existence, that it probably will live up to its reputation, that which Dr. Rudolf Weiss gave to it in his book on herbal medicine, that it is the herb, as he put it, for the failing heart. Now, I hope my herb is not, my heart is not failing, but that's how the way he put it, because it is considered to be, just as a mullein could be referred to as a great tonic remedy for the respiratory system, particularly the lungs, hawthorn berry I consider to be a remarkable proven tonic for the cardiovascular system, not just the heart, but also for various vascular components. So I take it and will continue to take it. It's a very safe herb to take. So those that raise its eyebrows when they say, oh, is Dennis pushing herbs for the heart, when in fact we've got cardiologists that do that. Well, I'm not in doing battle with cardiologists. All I'm saying is that there are various foods, hawthorn berry being one of them, that has a history in traditional medicine of supporting the heart and the vascular system. I take it, I have taken it for years, I'll continue to do so, and I believe that it lives up to its reputation. I'm still alive, Tony.
Thank you. My question was, is it okay to take ongoing daily?
Yes, I do. I think the difference here is that a tonic remedy, as opposed to a remedy that's prescribed to achieve a particular objective, a tonic remedy is something that is considered to have an ongoing support for an organ system or for the heart or for the body generally. So just as ginseng could be referred to as a tonic to the whole body in as much as that it supports all organ activity, hence its improving capacity for what we call vitality. So hawthorn berry is a tonic herb which is taken in a tonic way because it's not taken to achieve a particular benefit for a disease as such. It is taken to support the organ in its health and to fight any incipient problems that might be developing. That's my opinion on it, and I have not read anything that would contradict that. I stand contradiction, but as I say, I've taken it a very, very long period of time, and I'm not a young person.
Thank you very much. You've answered everything for me.
Okay, Tony, thank you.
Cheers. Bye, mate.
Bye.
And we've got Pat from Sunshine, and lucky for us, Dennis, they want to talk about ginkgo.
How about that? They must be interested to hear about this remarkable herb, and you probably, Pat, are one that would like to know a bit about it.
Yes, hello, Dennis. Yes, I would like to know.
Yes.
I've tried looking it up and thinking it would be a good herb to take.
Yes.
To promote good memory and
yes.
things, but
yes.
but also I've read a little bit about how it, you need to be monitored by a doctor when you take it. Is that right?
I would put a question mark beside that. What I would say is, if a person wants to use ginkgo, if they're taking a lot of other medication, right, lot of other medication, it might be worthwhile of them talking both to their doctor and to the pharmacist. Both
okay.
the pharmacist in particular would be well versed in the chemistry of the
uh-huh.
herb. Many GPs would not know very much about ginkgo biloba, even though it has been circulating in this country for very many years, and I gave the first lectures on it at Balgowla in Blackmore's uh-huh. auditorium years ago. It would not be permitted to be retailed in health food stores or retail outlets, let alone pharmacies. It would not be allowed to be marketed or sold in those areas if it was considered to be a medicinal substance that required
right.
a script or we required medical approval. That wouldn't be permitted. So what that means is, just as any product can have a reaction to some people, so a ginkgo can do that. But I will be honest with you and say, I can't think of all the years in which I've been practicing and having got to know this herb well over that period of time, I cannot think of any one of my patients or clients who has had a serious adverse reaction to taking it. Again, I come back to the point that if you are, dependent on multiple medications for multiple conditions, well, then I would suggest that anything you take should be taken cautiously and with advice from a health professional, whether it be a naturopath, a pharmacist, or a GP. And I come back to the fact that having taught over the years this system of medicine to many pharmacists, I'm increasingly impressed with the knowledge of modern pharmacists and their ability to be able to relate herbs to health problems and give advice on dosage and the way in which the herb should be used. There is some information in some literature suggesting that ginkgo might have some anti-clotting capacity. And as such, if there is anything to be cautious about, if a person is taking a heavy anti-clotting medication, and I'll call it under that umbrella, whether it be Eliquis or Warfarin or any of those things, there needs to be some consideration there. But again I say that if it was such a big problem there, one would have seen, or certainly in my opinion, one would have seen evidence of this, which I have not seen. And in some of our literature, that is actually being questioned. And I have many, many, many patients and clients that come to see me and talk to me who are on it and who are on other medications, being guided by myself, their pharmacist, and sometimes their GP. So I would say that a lot of the bad reports, it's an opinion here, a lot of the bad reports, I would say, need to be critically analysed to see what's behind those reports.
Right. So what about diabetes? With somebody with diabetes, would that be all right if they...
In my opinion, ginkgo biloba would be a useful herb because what it does, ginkgo, interestingly, is one of the remedies that's talked about, and I've recommended it, to help resist some of the conditions that diabetes over a period of time could develop. Diabetic retinopathy, diabetic peripheral vascular system conditions. Ginkgo has a reputation of benefit in both those, and for diabetic retinopathy is considered to be one of the best remedies for helping to resist that. I have not seen anyone, and I stand contradiction again, I have not seen anyone who has had any problems taking ginkgo in regular amounts. I have not seen any indication that that's interfered with their blood sugar levels, and certainly if they're being monitored by their GP, any adversity or any ramifications of taking it on their blood sugar levels would have come up in the regular blood sugar test that your GP does for the diabetes.
Right. Well, that's been really helpful. Thank you. And so it does promote good memory. Is that right?
I think this is one of the... I could talk about this all day, and I am convinced... I use ginkgo, but I could not... I don't forget too much about it. But with ginkgo, the thing that has made it so well-known, certainly in the Western world and certainly in Western Europe, let me emphasise in Western Europe, is its developed reputation as an aid to maintain a healthy cognitive activity. Cognitive deficits and dementia and the early stage of Alzheimer's have been documented in our literature as being potentially capable of benefit by a sustained use of ginkgo biloba. One of the texts that I have used in my many, many, many years of lecturing is a text by the great German writer and medical practitioner and herbalist, Dr. Rudolf Weiss, Weiss. His monograph in the book entitled Herbal Medicine, which I carry around with me and have lectured everywhere I've gone from it, and I mention that to professionals out there who want to get hold of a good text that is sensible, very medical, and very, very good, Dr. Rudolf Weiss, his classic edition, simply titled Herbal Medicine. In that monograph, Cognitive Benefits and Resistance of Loss of Memory are two of the major things that this remedy is called up for. And I have in my library at home a paper or a series of papers that were given at a very famous conference in New York, probably 20 years ago. I remember it because the chairman of the conference was a Spanish doctor, a Dr. Arpin. And he, in the preface to those papers given at the conference, stated words to the effect that ginkgo was at that stage the best remedy, the best natural remedy to address this problem. And I have taken that on board, and I believe it lives up to its reputation. Google the book by Weiss. Go to the page where he deals with ginkgo, and you'll see why I'm so confident about it.
Lovely. Thank you. Thank you. That's been very helpful.
Thank you, Pat.
Dennis. Have a good week.
Thank you.
Cheers. Thank you very much. Dennis, we've got a couple more calls to get through, so...
Oh, okay. Well, we were going to talk about ginkgo in full, so we got a fair way along the track, Greg.
I mean, I think we believe you when you say you can talk about it all day, Dennis.
I can.
We've got Riley from Spears Point, and they're taking ashwagandha for quite a while. Riley.
Yes, hello. How are you doing?
Hello, Riley. How can we help you?
Mate, I just want to ask whether is there any benefits for sleep regarding taking ashwagandha? Some people seem to believe there is, others not. And I'm looking for a herb or medicine that I can take because I've got irregular sleep from irregular shift work.
Look, I know a lot about ashwagandha. Ashwagandha is a Sanskrit name, and it is the a herb that is famously used in what's called Ayurvedic medicine, which for years of which I've taught a one semester program in. Ashwagandha, by the way, is a Sanskrit word, as I've said, and interestingly, what it means is smell of a horse, which is rather sounds a bit offensive, but the herb, interestingly, in most of the reading that I've done on ashwagandha and in my lecturing on it, it's mainly used as a herb, particularly used by males, to increase fertility and to address, if you like, a healthy reproductive activity. It also has got other properties, and in the West, increasingly, it's seen in preparations to address anxiety, and also to address some levels of insomnia. Let me just say that insomnia, in my opinion, is not an easy condition to treat, even with natural medicines. I think it would be a good call, or a big call, I should say, for me to say that this would solve your particular problem. It might be worthwhile a try, but it's not something that I would see as being a guarantee to address your particular form of insomnia.
Is there something else you'd recommend?
Well, look, interestingly, I have a lot of time for the Fijian herb, which we know as kava. Now, anyone that's been to Fiji would have been welcomed with a dish of kava, quite a heroic thing to participate in it, but you get used to it. And kava is used with three purposes. In varying dosages, it is used to address depression. Secondly, it's used to address anxiety. And thirdly, it is used to address insomnia. And I have recommended it to patients in the past, many of whom have got no benefit, some of whom have got significant benefit. Even just taking one or two capsules of it before bed has allowed them to have a sounder sleep. It's a herb that is illegal. It's a herb that one can purchase fairly freely from a good pharmacy that might be stocking herbs or from a health food store. It's not expensive, and it comes in a form as a capsule or tablet. Of all the herbs, I think it might be worthwhile giving that a go. Not that I'm an opponent of ashwagandha, don't get me wrong, but I think...
Is it
Go on.
Is it safe to take long term or?
What's that? Carver.
Carver, yeah.
Well, Fijians take it on a very, very regular basis, and as I've jocularly said, they're the most relaxed people in the world, fortunately, and maybe that's because of the great regard that they have for this great herb. It's carver is a herb, of course, which can be abused, but you have to take a lot of it to reach that level where it could have an intoxicating effect. It's permissible to use so long as you use it in accordance with the labelled directions.
Okay. All right, well, thank you very much. I'll give it a go.
Thank you, Riley.
We've got Wendy from Turalba, and Dennis, she's got hip bone on bone. She's waiting for surgery, but she's looking for something else she can take besides hard medicine. Afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Greg. Good afternoon, Dennis.
Hello, Wendy. I'm very well indeed. So you have a little bit of a problem with your hip joint, have you?
Yeah, major problem. Yeah, okay. It needs replacing, but I've been to the hospital and they said at John Hunter there's a 7-year wait for hip replacement.
So, how long?
Seven.
Seven years?
7 years, yes.
Goodness gracious me.
Yeah.
Well, look, I might excite you here by saying that there is a very interesting article, which in your case, if you were to contact my rooms, I might be able to rustle it up for you. It's an article. It's an article that was written by a Scottish or is a British doctor anyway, working in a Scottish hospital, and he was working in the outpatients department and seeing a lot of people coming and going, and he wrote about a case of an elderly woman who had a completely frozen or ankylosed hip joint, and she had exhausted all the modern medical ways of dealing with it. She was an elderly lady, and she had sustained multiple steroid injections and various therapies and treatments, but she was virtually, hip joint on hip joint, so to speak. There was nothing there. He had read a little bit about what was coming out of New Zealand, that is interesting information about the New Zealand green lip muscle. And he heard about the way in which it was being used to help manage severely compromised joint conditions. In this case, it had to do with the hip joint. And this is a lady, by the way, that could only walk with great assistance, with a walker, and he had nothing to offer her, but just said, look, this is the information, you might give it a go. Not that he prescribed it, just mentioned it to her. He was obviously an open-minded doctor who had read what seemed to be serious information about the New Zealand green lip muscle. The result was that over a period of time, that woman underwent an incredible alteration in the health and function of the hip joint, sufficient to so impress this good doctor that he wrote the paper, which eventually found its way into the British Medical Journal. It caused a bit of controversy when it went there because a lot of his colleagues thought it was quackery, but the point about it was there was sufficient information there to encourage the use of it. Now, the interesting thing is the New Zealand green lip muscle is very reasonably priced, readily available under different names, and contains a constituent in it that's very, very, very similar to glucosamine. So don't equate the New Zealand green lip muscle with glucosamine, but it has a chemistry that similar to it. And just as glucosamine is used for very, very debilitated joint problems with varying degrees of benefit, so the New Zealand green lip muscle, in my opinion, might be a worthwhile thing for you to work on because you've got 7 years, my dear, before the... Oh, dear, you frighten me. I'm feeling my own hip joint. Now, look, I say it seriously. New Zealand green lip muscle, I will try to find the paper. If you contact my rooms, they will make sure I will find it, even if I have to go through my scattered library, which is in one holy mess at present. But I will do my best to find it for you.
lovely. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just at the stage where, I was with John Hunter the other night, and they've said, look, you're going to be on Endone or Targin. And I said, what, until we get the replacement? And to me, that's just not on.
It's a long time. Well, you've got to try everything.
Yep.
Give this a go to start with. It's not going to work overnight, but I wouldn't have mentioned this to you had I not been impressed with this paper, which I have presented to some of my postgraduate students in my postgraduate lectures over many years as a potential remedy with restorative effects on debilitated joints.
All righty. Well, I might give you a week to find that document.
Oh, thanks a lot. Think you got me motivated.
Got a deadline.
All right. Okay.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right, Wendy. Good on you. Okay.
Thank you.
Right.
Bye.
Cheers, Wendy. We've got Michelle from Gateshead. She's got a question about osteoarthritis.
Hello, Michelle.
Hi, Dennis. How are you?
Not too badly for an old bloke.
I just have a question about osteoarthritis.
Yes,
my mum was diagnosed with osteoarthritis in her wrist, recently, and I was wondering if there's anything that she could take to help stop the inflammation and pain and to just prevent it from getting worse.
Okay. First of all, is mum taking anything at present, Michelle?
Just aspirin.
Okay. Aspirin's useful as an analgesic and a mild anti-inflammatory. But look, for all osteoarthritic conditions, a starting point for me is the use of glucosamine and chondroitin-based products. Now, there are many members of that group. If you were to Google osteoarthritis stroke glucosamine and chondroitin, you would see why it has become a very useful device for managing osteoarthritis, not rheumatoid arthritis, but osteoarthritis. Because you have rang in, if you give your name and address to the receptionist, I will send you a product that I manufactured for this condition called osteoarthritis. I'll send it to you free of charge as a gift. Now, I don't readily do this, and I'm not promoting my own product, but this is one that I'd be delighted to give you, dear mum, because it was developed by my thinking of these remedies in conjunction with some other things. So that's the starting base, glucosamine and chondroitin-based products. My products are Glucosaplex as a gift from the program.
And thank you so much.
And you'll let me know how it goes.
Thank you, I will.
Okay, thank you, Michelle.
Okay, thank you, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Dennis, we've got about a minute left.
Oh, dear.
If we get to Harry from, he's just been diagnosed with PNH and another syndrome. If you have to be really quick, about a minute. Afternoon, Harry.
Hey, how you going?
Good, Harry. Tell me about yourself. What's happening?
Well, Dennis, the MARTA, I've been going to the MARTA for about a month and a half.
Yes.
And they've diagnosed me with MYELODYS plastic syndrome.
Myeloid. Okay.
And also PNH, which is paroxysmal nocturnal hemoglobinuria.
Harry, to be quite honest with you, I know very little about it, and it would be wrong of me to suggest that I've got something to offer you for this. It's not a lot that I know about, and if you're being managed by the MARTA, they're good people, have a good reputation.
Of course, they're wonderful.
And I would say your best treatment and the only treatment would be what they're offering you, and I think you're in good hands. I would not suggest you look to complementary medicine. I don't think it would have much to offer you.
Okay. It's funny, Dennis, that this particular thing that I have, they told me that 1 in 8 million people get it.
Well, how about that?
I always knew I was special. But you are indeed.
You are indeed. Oh, I'm honoured to have spoken to you, Harry. Okay. Sorry I haven't been able to make a recommendation. You stay with those great people at MARTA.
Oh, I shall do. Absolutely. They're wonderful.
Okay. Thank you, Harry.
Cheers. Thank you very much, Harry. It's Health Naturally on 2NURFM. Dennis, we've got about 2 minutes left.
You keep worrying me. And 1 minute is 1 minute, next minute is 2 minutes. Well, 2 minutes.
I've decided to give you extra 2 minutes
okay.
this week.
Well, what we would say associated with the ginkgo, and I'll finish up on this largely, yep. we've talked about it in relationship to its potential benefit to help cognitive activity, that is, if you like, supporting our memory, our recall, and vice extols the virtues of that. We've spoken about it in many ways, but we have not perhaps emphasised its benefit in a very serious or difficult vascular conditions. Poor blood supply to the extremities, down the legs to the feet, and a condition called intermittent claudication, which is associated with very, very painful walking. Weiss talks very confidently about ginkgo being a remedy which, taken over time, can improve that peripheral circulatory problem. And I demonstrated this when I practiced opposite Newcastle Courthouse many, many years ago when I started using ginkgo. I saw people walking up from Newcastle Railway Station up that wretched hill who, over a number of months, were claiming that by taking the ginkgo, they didn't have to stop as frequently. So there was something in ginkgo as a remedy for improving peripheral circulation, assisting intermittent claudication and other syndromes associated with circulatory problems. That's right. Not a bad attempt to fill in that time you gave me.
It's not bad at all, Dennis. not bad at all. Actually, nice to see we got actually touch on ginkgo this week.
Well, I think we did a good job. We started off with a lady that asked the provocative question about the safety of it. I think we handled that well. But what I'd like to say to all listeners is, look, anything that I say is based on my experience. It's not infallible.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. Topics range from gardening to health, well-being, pet care, finance, business and travel. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.